listening online, on the app, or on one of our over 70 awesome radio stations across this great state of Indiana, thanks for tuning in to Hoosier Ag This Week from Hoosier Ag Today. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer, ready to run down the top news in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. Indiana farmers are growing tremendous corn and soybean crops this year. Just about everyone is predicting record yields this year. Well, everyone except for Pro Farmer. I'll explain a little bit later on in today's show. A long-anticipated water study was released earlier this week. Indiana Farm Bureau weighs in on the findings, some they agree with and some they question. And soybeans in your tires. How the Indiana Soybean Alliance honored first responders and promoted this new, better product at the same time. Grain market analysis will be on the way shortly, and Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast is coming up in about 10 minutes here on Hoosier Ag This Week. First, Indiana Farm Bureau held their delegate session last weekend. Water, rural broadband, and property taxes were again top policy priorities. Andy Eubank kicks us off as he takes a closer look.
The property tax issue is on the mind of many Hoosiers, and for farmers, it can be summed up quite simply. As Andy Tower, INFB Executive Director of Public Policy, says, taxes keep going higher, but farm income is not.
Farmland property taxes continue to rise 17% in 2023, 26.5% or so here in 2024, and really estimating another 20% increase in 2025. And so that's all occurring as the farm gate economy continues to head the other direction. I think USDA put out a report that 25% reduction in net farm revenue for this current year really just adds to the strain there for our members.
He told Hat, INFB is looking for ways to modernize the farmland formula and create relief. But farmers know the proper balance must be struck so local communities aren't hurt in the process.
There's give and takes because there's the other side of that ledger, and that's, you know, local community services, because property taxes, those go to local government. They don't go to the state general fund. And so we've got to be cautious and find that right balance between being able to find some relief for our farmers and then not shift the burden elsewhere or be forced to reduce the services that our members see and have delivered to them in the rural communities.
Getting high-speed broadband to all rural pockets of Indiana remains a priority as the expansion of on-farm technology opportunities grows. As broadband expands, there was also support among the 233 delegates for a standard height when constructing overhead communication cables, which would allow better movement of farm equipment.
This is a priority that the organization has been working on for several years now and will continue to focus on it. We have been blessed here in Indiana with the General Assembly allocating some funds, I think even back in the 2020 budget or maybe 2022 budget to expand access to broadband. And so we're starting to see those dollars make it out to rural communities, but we still have some pockets. And so we need to be able to kind of fill in those gaps, because as our members and rural communities continue to utilize ever-advancing technology, having that high-speed access to reliable broadband is critical. Now, one of the things that was interesting that came up on the delegate floor, as those dollars and that connectivity is starting to make its way out into the rural communities, one of the unintended consequences that we've started to hear from our members are, you know, when they hang those fiber lines on the existing telephone poles, at times, those line heights aren't being placed at a high enough level to then continue to have access to be able to get farm equipment into the fields. And so, again, an unintended consequence of being able to expand broadband and that connectivity. But we did have some discussion on the delegate floor about that. But we'll continue to work with our partners at the Indiana Broadband Office as well as the General Assembly and try to advocate to make sure that those resources for expanding broadband in rural Indiana continue in the next General Assembly.
More at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Andy. He'll be back in just a moment with grain market analysis. Canada's two major railways shut down Thursday in a contract dispute with their union, forcing a halt to cross-border shipments and posing a significant threat to U.S. farmers. But the shutdown was short-lived. Canada's biggest railways locked out 9,300 workers after the Lions and Teamsters Canada failed to meet a Thursday contract deadline, putting in jeopardy billions in U.S. farm exports. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's government initially refused to intervene, but the Associated Press is now reporting that they've ordered the parties into binding arbitration.
Corn, barley, oats, things like that, a lot of those products move on rail into Canada. So just for context, Canada was the fifth largest destination for cereal grains, receiving $1.1 billion in U.S. exports.
That's American Farm Bureau economist Danny Munch, who says the strike and the lockout at Canadian Pacific Kansas City Railway would have crippled shipments of food, grains, beans, potash, coal, and timber from Canada, and farm and energy imports from the U.S.
Canada is the fourth largest destination for soybean meal and rice, fifth largest destination for corn. When we talk about ethanol and barley, they're number one. So 44% of our ethanol exports go to Canada, 76% of our barley exports go to Canada.
Canada is also a critical source of fertilizer for U.S. farmers. Seems like we dodged a bullet on this one. More farm news coming in just a little while, but first let's check in on the markets and welcome back Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Eric. It was a mixed day of trade Friday that seemed to mirror a lot of the trading action throughout the week. We'll have settlements from Friday trade coming up. First, market analysis, and I visited with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading for that. Steady once again for the corn market. That seems to be kind of the way the week has gone. Beans back and forth, trying now to get back some of what was lost on Thursday. So back and forth, and maybe that is in conjunction with some back and forth weather forecast too.
Well, yes, it's always good to be with you, Andy. Appreciate the opportunity. We've got some mixed weather. We've been dry here the last couple weeks here, particularly in the eastern Corn Belt. Forecasts are some rain moving in this final week of August next week, but that's enough to give the market just a little bit of support here. But otherwise, some crop tour has been taking place here, confirming some very big yield potential, generally supporting those USDA numbers that came out earlier this month. Record yields, as your listeners I'm sure are aware of, projected for both corn and beans on a national basis. But it's been mixed bag here. It's been cool for corn at night, which is good. Get that corn crop to get good kernel depth here and add some test weight as the growing season winds down. But just more of a mixed bag. We've built so much bearishness into this market too, Andy. I'd add that in addition to weather, we're starting to see a little more export business surface here too.
On Friday, a Fed chairman comment about interest rates. Maybe it's time to lower those. The stock market did seem to respond. Crude oil is strong. The dollar index very weak. So the macro outside markets, any impact on the grains and oil seeds?
You hit the nail on the head, Andy. I'd say that the most indirect impact on corn and beans would be that weaker dollar, as you mentioned. It's really plummeting here as we glance at the market here on Friday. As we look ahead, what are we looking at there? We're looking at a weaker dollar, not necessarily great for the U.S. traveler, as it were, but good for export business, making our exports cheaper in relation to foreign competitors. So I think the combination of the weaker flat price, four-year low in a flat price, corn and beans, and a weaker dollar is also starting to boost some export interest. We've seen a number of export sales announcements from USDA this week, primarily for soybeans, one or two for soybean meal. We did see one or two sneak in there for corn too, and we saw another good week of export, new crop export business from the USDA on Thursday for both corn and beans.
Brian Basting, economist at Advanced Trading, and Brian's number is 309-664-2314. Friday settlements now, September corn 367¾, down 3¾. December down 2.5 cents, 391. March 409½, losing 2 cents. September beans 952, up a dime and 3/4. And Novi 973, up 11½ cents. Jan beans 990 and 3/4, up 11¼. September wheat 502¼, almost 9 cents lower. Dees wheat 528, down 7½. The meats mixed. October live cattle 175.70, down 20. And October lean hogs 80.55, up 92. You are up to date now on the markets. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
In farming, experience counts. Every growing season teaches us something. Experience counts in farm broadcasting as well. and no other farm broadcasting team in the state has the experience of Hoosier Ag Today. Eric Pfeiffer, C.J. Miller, Andy Eubank, and Sabrina Halverson, an experienced team that gives you credible coverage of today's agriculture. On air, online, and on your mobile device, turn to Hoosier Ag Today.
After a very pleasant week, August trying to make a comeback here in the Indiana landscape. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Farm Forecast. Tell you what, this past week was quite nice overall. Humidity values were in check for most of the week. Temperatures were downright cool a couple of days. We woke up to some mid-40s at times this past week in areas of the state. Daytime highs lower 70s. I tell you what, it felt more like easily late September than August. Well, Mother Nature says not so fast. We saw temperatures climb late in the week, and here over the weekend we're going to be very warm and a lot more humid. Dew point values are climbing, and we're going to be quite muggy as we move through the next 5 to 7 days for sure. We've got this warm flow coming up from the southwest. The humidity values are climbing, but still not a lot of moisture, at least right away. In my mind, we're looking at our best chance of moisture as we move through this upcoming week with heat-based instability. But over this weekend, your Saturday and Sunday should be fully dry in all areas. There's a cluster of thunderstorms that wants to develop overnight to tonight through tomorrow morning right along the Mississippi River Valley, Iowa, Illinois, and I think some cloud cover offshoots from that can make it into Indiana, but I'm not concerned about precipitation. Now you get into Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, heat and humidity are definitely ramping up. Instability is going to be a thing. I think we get through Monday without any major precipitation, but I think Tuesday we'll have to deal with on again, off again thunderstorms. It's only going to be about 40 to 50% of the Hoosier State that can get it and back into Ohio as well, but there is going to be some heat-based instability around. Wednesday, once again, can't rule out pop-up thunderstorms, but I think the bigger threat will come late Wednesday night into early Thursday. That's when we can see maybe coverage around 70% of the state, and we've also got thunderstorms trying to fire off Thursday afternoon into Thursday night. Our frontal boundary has been pushed back into Friday. It will sweep through Friday midday to afternoon. Behind it, we see some significant changes. Before we get there, let's talk precipitation. I think the frontal passage itself can bring us anywhere from a quarter to three quarters of an inch. If you bundle this week together, this upcoming week together, and just say from Monday afternoon through Friday afternoon, all the pop-up activity that can pop up here and there, the frontal boundary passage, everything together precipitation-wise, I think we're looking at a quarter to probably 1 inch of precipitation with coverage at around 80 to 90% of the state. I'm still concerned there can be some holes, but I think most of us will get something here this upcoming week. Now, to the changes behind the front, significant drop in temperatures. It's very warm. It's very August-like here this weekend and the start this week. It will not feel that way as we go into the Labor Day holiday weekend. Could be one of the cooler starts to the Labor Day weekend in a while. Those cool temperatures go through at least Sunday. I'm Ryan Martin.
The average American reaches for their mobile phone about 350 times a day. For Indiana farmers, that number is probably higher, as the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app keeps them updated on the latest markets, weather, and farm news information. If you haven't downloaded this free app, you're missing out on a powerful and portable resource. The Hoosier Ag Today mobile app can be downloaded at the Apple Store and Google Play, and at HoosierAgToday.com. The Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
Thanks for spending some of your weekend with us here at Hoosier Ag Today. You're tuned in to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer with the top news in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. The crop tour rolled through Indiana earlier this week. Soybeans, as expected, looked fantastic. I can see soybean Sean Castile with Purdue Extension just beaming with pride. I'm sure he'll be bragging beyond belief. And I'm going to have to put up with it in a new Purdue Crop Chat here soon. You'll be able to hear that at HoosierAgToday.com. Corn, though, didn't exactly impress. Pro Farmer pegged their Indiana corn estimate at 187.5 bushels per acre, around 3% more than a year ago, but well below what many around here might project. That includes Purdue Extension corn specialist Dan Corn Quinn. Now, Pro Farmer said they spotted tar spot and other corn diseases as they entered Indiana. Quinn says he's seen tar spot in many fields, including his own research plots. He's still anticipating record yields here in Indiana this season, though.
A lot of that corn is at a point where, even though we have it, it's really not going to impact it. So it really comes back to, you know, when that tar spot comes in. So if you're doing yield estimates now and you're finding tar spot, you know, in the lower canopy and maybe pushing towards the middle canopy, but that corn is, you know, dented or just beginning to dent, you know, we probably don't expect much of a yield reduction at all from that tar spot.
Quinn isn't concerned with the crop tour number. He's actually encouraged by the 3% bump from a year ago.
Last year, I think they were in the low 180s for their yield estimate for the state, and then it was 203 last year. So they're actually ahead in terms of their yield average for the state comparison to last year, which was the state record yield last year.
As Quinn does his own informal crop tour of the Hoosier State, he's confident that we're in good shape for another year of strong yields, barring anything crazy happening.
Just looking at the data, I'd say the eastern part of the state's had some disease issues. They've been a little bit more challenged in terms of, you know, the overall rainfall and the weather conditions that they've had than I would say the western part of the state. But you look at, you know, southwest Indiana, just outstanding crop conditions down there. Northwest Indiana, outstanding crop conditions. Central Indiana, outstanding crop conditions.
Check out my full interview with Quinn at HoosierAgToday.com. Now, darn near everyone, except for Pro Farmer apparently, is expecting a record corn yield in Indiana this year. Even USDA has us pegged at 207 bushels per acre. As Andy Eubank reports, though, Northwest Indiana might be a drag on that number.
Time will tell. We still got about, you know, 5 or 6 weeks here before we get to harvest, and a lot of the corn is just starting to dent, so we can still put a lot of test weight and a lot of grain fill in, and a lot to be told yet, but I think the 207 for Northwest Indiana is going to be pretty tough.
Jeff Lakin, a technical agronomist for Channel Seeds. In a Channel Seeds growing season update, he tells Hat the problems with the crop north of Rensselaer started with later planting dates.
We planted a lot of corn in late May and early June even. We had some stand issues in some places, and, you know, we had a big rain early in July. We had about 6 to 12 inches across part of my territory the first 2 weeks of July, and then it shut off. We were really getting dry there at the end of July. First part of August, we were really starting to see a lot of heat stress and drought stress across some of northern Jasper and Newton counties into Lake and Porter somewhat. Really, it was starting to take a toll on that crop. For the most part, a lot of my territory, the corn looks really good. You get south of Rensselaer and go east, and the crop looks fantastic.
Lakin says the northern Indiana soybean crop is as good as advertised, but there were also problems in July.
You move into some of these pockets up here north of me at Rensselaer, where we had some of that heavy rain, the beans took a toll in July. We had a lot of yellowing of beans, some ponding. We got some holes in some of the beans. But they're coming along now. They really do look pretty good for the most part. I think there'll be some variability in them as well. But we got a lot of time on the soybeans yet. We got a long ways to go on some of these.
He does want farmers to continue scouting with soybean aphids and tar spot prevalent in late planted cornfields. Some farmers are still considering a late season fungicide application. Hear more in the full Hat and Channel Seeds growing season update at HoosierAgToday.com and our free mobile app. I'm Andy Eubank.
All right, Andy, thanks. Let's go from Indiana's cornfields out to D.C., where we ask the question, how accurate is the Congressional Budget Office's assessment of the House Agriculture Committee's Farm Bill proposal? As Sabrina Halverson reports, one Senate ag leader suggests it may be worth another look.
A recent Congressional Budget Office report estimated the House Ag Committee's Farm Bill proposal is $33 billion over budget. However, Senate Agriculture Committee ranking member John Bozeman of Arkansas says CBO did not give enough consideration to the House bill's use of USDA's Commodity Credit Corporation funds.
The CCC to me is for farmers. Okay, it should be spent on agriculture. There's been a lot of things that, you know, the big climate initiative of Secretary Vilsack was a couple billion dollars that again is peripherally attached to agriculture. I think that there's a lot of money floating out of there that could be used in better ways. And so that's what they're saying is let's use some of those dollars for the ag safety net, which desperately needs to be improved. It just simply doesn't work.
CCC funds are used to implement specific programs established by Congress, as well as to carry out activities under the authorities of the CCC Charter Act. Bozeman says the CCC wording in the previous Farm Bill worked at the time, but things have changed.
The 2018 Farm Bill was a great bill for 2018 and 2019, and then the pandemic came. And the 2018 Farm Bill, which was based on 2012 data, it simply doesn't work. And so we've got to get it, you know, in business. So what they're trying to use is some of those CCC dollars. That there's a lot of money there. And so that's what they were trying to capture. CBO refused to give them any credit for that.
Bozeman says lawmakers would still like to complete a new bill this year. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
Lawmakers aren't the only ones that would like that. More Hoosier Ag this week on the way next.
AgBioScience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
Share more about what Rally is designed to do in context of this current venture environment.
I always get more value from people who do stuff outside of what I do on a daily basis. Their perspectives, the way they've solved problems, I can always apply some gem or anecdote to what I'm doing, whether it's my business or whatever I'm doing, personally or professionally, it helps me be better. And so you combine that with the productivity boom, the disruption of data and technology faster than ever with all businesses. No longer are we just starting a software company, a hard tech company, an ag bioscience company. There's all of these other sectors and expertise that we need to bring things to market today. So I think that's the real magic.
Get more episodes online at agrinovusindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. The long-awaited 10-year study of the Indiana water supply was just completed, and the results were unveiled Monday by the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Andy Eubank has details.
In short, the findings are that water is plentiful, but the distribution of that water is not even. Andy Tower, Indiana Farm Bureau Executive Director of Public Policy, says they agree with that finding of what's called Water Policy and Planning, a 10-year update.
It does seem that, yes, we do. We are blessed here in Indiana with plentiful water. But as you alluded to, the distribution of that water is where the challenge becomes. You know, and really, it's kind of the northern two-thirds of the state of Indiana where we're really blessed with water. But as we get, especially in that lower third, that is where water distribution or water supply becomes a major challenge. And here in the central part of the state, there's water there, but there's definitely some pockets of some challenge.
Tower says INFB was pleased with recommendations that were outlined to address water distribution.
In terms of the need for, you know, a statewide plan, we need some additional monitoring to really assess and verify the volume of water, the volume of resource that we do have here in Indiana. And so a lot of that aligns with what we've heard from our members and ultimately our internal water task force here at Indiana Farm Bureau.
Tower says next steps are to wait on remaining studies being done, which should provide clarity on future direction. I'm Andy Eubank.
All right, Andy, thanks. Let's take a legal flashback to last week in the Indiana Lieutenant Governor debate at the Indiana State Fair. The Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance will be championing a bill in the upcoming legislative session that will provide tax incentives to retailers who install pumps to offer higher blends of ethanol and to provide biodiesel. Lieutenant Governor candidates Micah Beckwith, the Republican, and Terry Gooden, the Democrat, both shared their support of ethanol after I asked them a question specifically about ethanol. Beckwith told the crowd,
"When it comes to ethanol, one of the things right now, people are being limited by what the government is the handcuffs the government's putting on. So when it comes to 88, instead of going, you know, even just jumping up from 87 to 88, it's a government roadblock. And so if we get the government out of the way, that'll increase so much more ethanol production in the state of Indiana."
Beckwith also touched on sustainable aviation fuel and the roadblock the federal government is putting up there, preventing American farmers from participating in that market.
"And we've got biodiesels that could really go a long way when it comes to aviation fuel, and Indiana could be a leader in that, but it's going to have to take the state fighting the federal government say, get out of the way, let us be innovative, and let us go down that path. And so that's what we'll do. As I'll do that as Lieutenant Governor, and Mike Braun will do that as well.
Gooden said that for him, it all comes down to education.
What my dream is and what my hope is we don't just have 10% ethanol. What I would love to be able to see is for our scientists to continue to push where all of the fuel can be made from corn and soybeans. And that's what I'm talking about, growth on the family farm. So as we work forward in Indiana, as we move forward in Indiana, we have to figure out those ways. Okay, how do we incentivize folks to study this?
Gooden told the crowd that it was hard for him to say as an IU grad, but Purdue does produce some of the best farming scientists in the world. He hopes their studies on ethanol continue. Hey, you might have some soybeans in your tires there. I don't mean that you might have accidentally driven over some and got them stuck in the tread. I mean, you might literally have soybeans in your tires. It's the soybean checkoff at work. A neat story here as we close out today's show. Indiana Soybean Alliance board member Mark Legan explains one of the projects their partnership with the United Soybean Board has helped bring to fruition.
Goodyear Tires has come out with a tire that basically replaces 60% of the petroleum oil with soybean oil. And there's some attributes that make it a better tire. And the Indiana Soybean Alliance Board thought it was important to try and help promote this. And one of the things we looked at doing was offer it to four different first responders across the state.
And so Legan nominated his hometown sheriff's department. Putnam County Sheriff Jared Baugh tells Hoosier Ag Today they had to do some research, but they were certainly intrigued by these soy tires.
Being a cold weather state, cold weather county, you start to reading into it about the traction being better, more pliable in colder weather. And I'm like, well, now this is starting to make a little bit of sense. They surely aren't high performance tires like we require on police package or pursuit rated vehicles. And they're like, nope, sure are.
And Legan says this just goes to show how incredible and versatile soybeans truly are.
Virtually anything that we manufacture using petroleum-based oil, we can make out of soybean oil too. And oh, by the way, it's a sustainable product.
Goodyear exceeded its goal of a 25% increase in soybean oil consumption by 2020. And it's making noteworthy progress on its target of fully replacing all its petroleum-driven oils with soybean oil by 2040. You can read about the other recipients of the soy tires at HoosierAgToday.com. If you miss CJ this week, don't worry, we didn't can him or anything. He's just out moving. I don't know about you, but I'd rather be hosting a weekend show than doing that. Thanks for joining us. We'll do it again next weekend. Same hat time, same hat channel. This has been Hoosier Ag This Week from Hoosier Ag Today.